Good afternoon, and welcome to another Clearwater Jazz Holiday Foundation's Young Lions Jazz Master Virtual Sessions. I'm your host for today, Michael Kernodal, and we have a special treat today because today's educator is none other than Dr. Pete Carney, and the topic is modern chord substitutions. So we know this is going to be another great one. We had one the other day on saxophone styles, and I mean, it was a great one. It's one that you definitely had to go back and listen to and take notes and practice, and we're expecting the same thing today from Dr. Carney. Just a reminder, if you're going to come in today, if you want to ask questions, just go ahead in the chat feature, type them out, and we'll make sure we try to save some time at the end of the session to answer any questions. You can just hit that raise hand feature as well, and we'll get right there with you. And we hope you enjoy today's sessions. Don't forget, there's more upcoming free sessions, and it's posted on our website, www.clearwaterjazz.com/education. And of course, we always like to hear feedback from you, whether you have future suggestions for topics or you just want to give us feedback. Email us at info@clearwaterjazz.com. So before we move forward, we have to thank our sponsors. For the studio archives, we want to thank our sponsors over there. It's brought to you by Blue Water Wealth Management, Ed Stewart Partners, and Duke Energy, as well as don't forget to check out the Young Lions podcast wherever you stream. And that's brought to you by our friends over there at Marine Max Clearwater. And you can search Young Lions Jazz Master Virtual Sessions wherever you stream. So some of the past sessions Dr. Carney has done for us, here's a good one, Building a Good Solo. That was great. Safer at Home, Advanced Improvisation and Simple Text, Part 1-3. So you can go in the archives and check out any of that great stuff. And I just want to tell you a little bit about Dr. Carney. If you don't know him, he is the Director of Jazz Studies at State College of Florida in Bradenton. Recently, his big band students took 8 out of the 20 tiers of the All-State Big Band. I think that might be 21 at this point because the numbers keep growing. And he's an awesome saxophonist. You'll probably see him out in the community playing all up and down Florida and all over the country. He's headlined on plenty of festival stages, and we're just thankful to have him here today. So we're not going to take up a bunch of time because we want to hear a little bit more about modern chord substitution. So, Dr. Carney,
yeah,
stage is all yours. Let's swing.
Thanks a lot, Michael. It's great to be back. I always enjoy these sessions, and I've enjoyed going through other people's sessions and seeing everybody's different take on so many things. There's so many ways to talk about jazz. You can talk about one solo in like 5 different ways, you know. Is it the notes? Is it the person? Is it their life? Is it the soul of their music? Is it the technical stuff? And today I wanted to talk to you guys about the sort of transition. In the last session, we talked about early saxophone. And when I say saxophone, I really kind of mean everybody, but I just kind of highlighted some of the saxophone players. And today we're talking about modern chord substitutions and how we kind of get from the early stuff that we heard into a modern style of jazz. And a lot of times younger guys think that it's all about Charlie Parker, which is true to some extent. But what's missing there is that the real transition that everybody saw was Coleman Hawkins. And what he did really created Charlie Parker in a sense. Being as it has Hawkins was known, was really the first real tough musician in a sense. Like when he played, it was this sort of aggressive like style and personality. Whereas before him, you like his predecessors and sort of contemporaries would be Lester Young, or Louis Armstrong, and they were definitely confident players. Don't get me wrong, but Bean was known as playing this very harmonically aggressive player and rhythmically aggressive and just a real sort of tough, what we call a tough tenor player today. He really started this sort of quest into modern chord changes. And so I wanted to look at what he did in this solo. The one that's the most famous is Body and Soul, and just wanted to walk through it. What's cool to me is when we look at the places between, like, between styles, right? It's too simple in jazz to talk about cool jazz and bebop and swing or bossa nova or whatever, like, and just think of these as like these isolated islands, when the truth is a lot of times there's in between times, you know, the in between spaces when the music is transitioning from one thing to another. And that's where you see some really cool stuff, because you see, like, you see Coleman Hawkins here sort of winding down the early style and the same person beginning the new style, right? So he still embodies the old sound, the early saxophone sound, but his personality as what we think of as modern, right? And he was really known as the first modern cat. And when we say modern, like, what does that mean? It's important to think about for a second. What does modern mean? Like, we take it for granted, but in his time and going forward, modern meant like sort of a person on a quest, to always change or always to get better, to always be thinking about what's new in music. And now that's pretty common in jazz, right? Miles Davis would embody that, and Coltrane would embody that, like, idea that modern is always looking forward. And Bean started that harmonically here with this solo. He was the first one to say, what if I push out on these chords a little bit, right? What if I play some of the extensions of it more than I play the fundamentals? Now, again, going back to the other lecture, you have to be able to do both. That's the point of doing these two lectures together, the early versus the modern. You can't, I would say, you're better off as a musician if you really pay attention to both styles, the early style and the modern, and be able to switch gears, because half of your gigs will be an older style and half of your gigs will be a modern style. Let's jump in here to Body and Soul and check it out. His style here is still very traditional, his saxophone style, but what you'll see in his solo is that he starts drifting into, like, exploring some of the other notes or substituting chords or adding passing chords that might not have usually been there. Let's take a look at that. I'll kind of let it play for a minute, because it doesn't really make sense to talk about the solo if we don't really set it up with a melody. He's going to embellish the melody a lot. When he could, where Lester Young might have played the melody very simply, Coleman Hawkins, in a sense, would fill in every crack that he can. Like, any place there's a rest, he's going to play in it. You know what I mean? If Lester Young would let the melody breathe with space, Coleman Hawkins would jump right in all of those spaces and put these little chord substitutions or passing notes in the cracks. It's a different type of approach to art. It's not better or worse by any stretch, right? It's just a different human behavior, like a different idea of creativity. Let's check it out. Oops. Top here. This is the beginning of starting a fight, in a sense, with jazz. Like, this is why he was so tough, right? I know it's just like a beautiful little passing chord, but he jumps. You've got a D half diminished here and a G7. Now, most guys would have played one or the other because they're related, Coleman Hawkins is like, yeah, check this out. I'm going to play both these chords. I'm going to jump all over this. I'm going to play vertically instead of stretching out horizontally or sort of sideways. He's not afraid to play every single chord that happens. And this is a tough tune. It's still one of the toughest tunes. The reason, one of the reasons we still play this tune is that it's so hard. Like when you hear people play Body and Soul, you can say, okay, he can play or she can play. Because you know that it's challenging. The audience doesn't know this part of the conversation, generally speaking. All they hear is a beautiful song, a beautiful solo, but musicians know that, man, if you're messing with Body and Soul, like, you have to have your stuff together because these chords will really trip you up. You got chords every two beats. Well, check this out. I'm just going to back it up one more time and check out this, how he goes after these chords instead of letting it pass. There it is. One more time. Look at that. Well, look, he's outlining these chords straight up the E flat chord, straight up the C7. Well, he's not going straight up the C7, but he's hit this E on it, and then he's climbing up to the fourth, the seventh, and then the ninth here. He's beginning to, like, push the chord, right? This is usually C7. He plays the C7 for you, but look, he's putting this on top of this. This is, in a sense, a early idea of substituting chords. Let's back it up one more time. It's a little tedious sometimes to listen to this stuff like this. If you don't, I'm speaking as a teacher, like seeing people in classrooms, like with jazz, sometimes you got to really dig in. Like, if you really want to learn something, you have to dig into a couple measures, not like the whole piece, you know? And you're like, well, does that mean that you have to do that all the time? No, it means you're kind of breaking down somebody's real important innovation in like a very small moment. Once you understand that very small moment of their playing, then when you listen to the whole 3 minutes, you have a better perception of it overall. You know, let's back it up one more time. I could listen to this all day because it's like, it's magical architecture here. There he is. Look at that. All right, so right here. Like this D, most guys would have played a traditional arpeggio here. They would have played the C7, but Coleman Hawkins here is playing the ninth, the fourth, or the 13th, and then the ninth again. He's showing us that there's something else in this world for this song. Does that make sense? He's saying that C7 doesn't just have to be the chord anymore. We can play more stuff. We can play the top of these chords. Let's keep going back up just a little bit. You can hear, like, when you get to that moment, it's like, it sounds a little bit hip, you know? Like, I don't want to say hip. It's like, he's just a touch ahead of his time right at that moment. See that gracefulness? Look at all this, you know. You could, like, in this section here, you can hear him begin to, like, stretch the chords or stretch the harmony into deeper places than just being primary chords or being sort of the other side of the chord. Whereas, before him, most musicians were playing the lower part of the chord. Coleman Hawkins is basically substituting and putting giving you more of the upper part of the chord than the bottom of the chord, which was more traditional. And it shows a sort of like a deep knowledge of the chord, because you're able to not run to the root in a sense. And this is sort of a mind game, but when you play, like if I know I have to play F7 next, what note comes to your mind when I say F7? F, right? And what Coleman Hawkins is able to do is say, I'm not going to play F, I'm going to play G, right? Because it's a game of, instinct, like music improvisation involves like remembering chords. He's showing that like I can remember the top of the chord as much as I remember the bottom, which is like the more basic part to remember. He's saying that I can hang out in the other neighborhoods that are harder to remember, right? Speculative, just a little bit. And this whole passage here, it's like you're starting to see the world change a little bit. Like he's not playing, like this isn't really, it's not F minor in the old way. He's playing, this is really like a C minor here. He's walking straight up C minor and back down C minor. And then we see him kind of push against the chord right here on the F minor. Ba, 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 ba. These notes are really kind of outside of the chord. Check it out. Back it up just a little bit. Back up. Hold on a second. Right here. You know how dissonant this is in a sense? It's very, and I don't mean in a negative way. I mean a really beautiful moment of tension right here. Right here, how the G, E-flat, the E, this like, it's really, in a sense, this is like modern chord substitution. It's against the chord. It's not the primary chord that most people were playing. Back it up, just listen to that part if we can catch it again. Now, very traditional playing here. Very traditional. He goes, in a sense, sort of back to his roots and everything he's grown up on, because now he's outlining the chords in a very, to me, it's very much he's just playing through E major here. Like this is all E major with the exception of the C over the A minor. It's just, it's that, well, he does this on the bridge because the first half is so, the first part of his solo here is so modern that this is sort of like a retreat in a positive way to the tradition, so that he's not, like if you stretch out and you're showing people a new idea, you have to be able to, learn something by 20%. Not, it can't be 100% new. Like that, I feel like that's consistently true in music and art. Like if something is so far out, people don't get it. But if it's like 20% new, your audience is like, okay, that's neat. Like that little moment he had, that was nice. And now he played me the regular stuff I'm used to. So he kind of, in order to make the new stuff stick, you have to have some of the traditional stuff. Let's listen to that again. Like I think you'll just hear that all of this is, it's really like strong, like vertical playing. He's really hitting the chords really hard. But it's very diatonic to each chord, to E major, and it kind of just plays E major through most of this. Back it up 1 second. Oh, I got to back it up. I kind of missed it. Sorry. Right here. Oops. Look at that lick. Super cool here. Like, this has nothing to do with E major. And he probably practiced this beforehand, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, this lick right here is like the like a moment in sort of music history where he's hip to like messing with the truth. Like, E major's the truth here, and he's saying, nope, I'm going to play F over it. You know, you don't have to know a ton about music, but F is a half step away from E. He kind of gets away with that because he's it's a half step above the right note, which is E, and he's got this A to B, which is like a lower neighbor to the fifth of the chord, and then you got that flat nine again. It's incredibly modern. This is like it breaks all the rules in a beautiful way. Check it out again. Even if you're not a musician, this will jump in your ear. You know, people are like, whoa, like that little moment of dissonance is really colorful. Everybody gets it. You don't have to be a musician. That's sort of my point here. And what he's doing here, again, the rest of that little section we just went through, a lot of guys couldn't do that. And that's why this solo became so famous, because he just goes up and down these chords like they're toys. You know, there's no flinching. Most guys before Coleman Hawkins would have played some beautiful stuff and kind of played across the key maybe, whereas he can just go up and down the architecture of the piano part. You know, he's really, and he as far as I remember, I think he did play piano, and he was like, the piano kind of helped show him some of the stuff that he should do on the saxophone. And that's why we always kind of recommend that if you're going to play jazz for a while, eventually you want to start playing some piano to start seeing. It helps you see the stuff that you can't see on trumpet or saxophone or trombone. You put those chords down in your hands, and you get to a visual way to remember them. Let's keep going a little bit. Right here, look at that. He plays this B over E flat. That's in a sense a substitution, like, or delayed of the right note. Like, the chromaticism is becoming more important than the chord. Right. This, we could stop. Another thing I should say here is we could stop on every single bar and talk about everything, you know, and people would have different opinions on it. I'm not giving you absolutes here on this is the only way to think about it. Just trying to give you things that I know or believe in, and other people generally agree on it. But this B here, you could talk about it in different ways, but it's definitely and technically a chromatic wrong note, because this B flat is the right note of the chord. But by playing this note here, he makes the listener wait a beat. And he's showing us that the idea of substitutions is that you can get away with making your listener wait about a beat or two. And I would say that my impression generally is that's about it. Like, if you start substituting chords or adding chromatic notes, they won't buy it after a measure or four beats, because it starts to sound too dissonant. And he's kind of showing like the future of music here, and showing cats what to do, which is you can do some other stuff, but it has to be related to the chords, and it has to come back to the chord. And I always tell my younger players, like, you can play substitutions as long as you land in the chord you were leaving, all right, or if you were stealing from. Like, if you're stealing from C major, and you're going to play C sharp minor, and then F sharp 7. You can play that over C major, but you have to get back to C major so that your audience buys it. It's a lot like, I think of it like you're doing the Olympics, you do like the long thing where they run, I can't remember, like the vault or something. And you can vault in the air, but if you land on your butt, then it doesn't sound good. So it's just worth thinking about that. A lot of times people want to learn to play outside, but you have to be able to play inside, outside, inside. If you get back to the chord, it sounds awesome. If you can't get back to the note like he does here, he plays this note that doesn't belong here, and he gets back to what he's supposed to play. That's a beautiful substitution. Let me back it up a little bit. Look at all that chromaticism. You know, these notes, this B doesn't really belong here, but because it's chromatic, you can do it, and you have a short amount of time to get back to where you're supposed to be, in a sense. And he knows that. Look at this. Here's a great lesson for you. Remember, we talked about this on the other page. He played this before. Exactly, almost. He played it almost exactly like this before. So what does that mean? Hopefully, like, you didn't think about it until I told you, and I wouldn't have thought about it if I hadn't seen it here visually, right? That means you can repeat your cool ideas in different parts of your solo. Just because you play something once doesn't mean you can't use it later. A lot of guys kind of hesitate to reuse their material. It just draws your listener in even more. It's like anything. If you use too much of it, it wears itself out. Too much ketchup on anything will kill anything, right? But we obviously reuse ketchup. Let's back it up just a touch. There it is. Whew. Right? What is that? It's just a chromatic sequence, folks. It's the same lick moving down by a half step. That doesn't fit with this chord. You know, this is another modern chord substitution. He starts this chord here. Remember we just talked about, you got to play inside, outside, and inside. He starts this on this F minor. This is all a nice little chromatic lick from the fifth to the third. And then right here, it's a chromatic version of what he just played. Look, and then over here, he plays the E over the E flat. This doesn't work. It works because of this sequence. This sequence, da 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 ba ba da da ba da ba ba da ba ba da ba ba da da. He finally gets to the E flat. Again, he plays inside, he plays outside, and he gets back inside the chord. So that's what's slick. That's it. And a lot of times people, like, the problem is, like, with substitutions, a lot of times younger players just, like, if they're playing on G major, they'll play G major, and then they'll try and play A flat over G major. But that creates a habit where you're not playing G major, A flat, G, and you're going back to where you started. So it's worth thinking about. You know, if you don't practice playing in, out, in with your substitutions, then you're the habit's not going to be there for you to come back. Let's listen to that sequence one more time. Mm-hmm. Look at all that. Look at that sequencing. Let's take a look at what it is. And I don't know what it is right now. We're going to figure it out. You know what I mean? So this is your, yeah, he's got an A minor sequence. He's coming from C minor. And then he goes to A minor over F minor, you know? And then he goes to G sharp minor. And then he goes to G minor. So again, it's a nice little chromatic sequence. A minor, G sharp minor, G minor right here. It's a nice way to sort of wander down through the chord, right? The thing about chord substitutions is if you play it strong enough, it will work, all right? If you outline the chord very specifically, he's not playing A minor 13 or anything, you know what I mean? He's just kind of playing A minor and then G sharp minor, and then G minor. If you try and actually do too much with a substitution, you usually break your harmonic like sense of strength because it doesn't work. Most substitutions, like when you're putting a chord on top of a chord, most of the times they're very strong and very simple. Like they're either a triad, like a major triad or a minor triad. And you can oftentimes, like if we get to Coltrane later on, you can put any chord on top of a chord if you do it like very specifically and like very directly, right? If you miss, then it falls apart quickly. But if like for example, if I'm playing C major, I can play C sharp on top of it. But if I miss one of the notes, it doesn't usually work, right? What he does here that's so great is he plays it really strong. He just plays real simple A minor, G sharp minor, G minor. And then because they're chromatic, you get the substitution sort of bridge. I kind of think of it like if it makes sense. And the most common way to make sense is to go move by half steps. Like any chord progression by half steps will usually draw your listener in and sound cool and logical. You can also move by fourths. That's pretty common. Coltrane also especially moved by thirds. And that's the hardest one to make it work quickly, right? Or it's the hardest one to superimpose on another chord. Let's back it up just one more time. Listen to that little sequence. You can hear, again, if he changed the order of these notes, it wouldn't work. He sets it up with, I'm going to play 1-3-5-3, and then 5-6, and then 1-3-5-3-5-6, then 1-3-5, you know, 5-6. If the sequence has to stay the same in order for the listener to buy that it's a substitution, it's like a very much like a card game or a sleight of hand. Like you have to get it right for the listener to believe the magic trick, in a sense. And that's what he does so well. He's not trying to mix up a lot of times people try and play the chord one way and then the next chord they try and invert it, and the next way they try and do something different with it. I would say don't do that first. You know, like the first thing is just play these sequences straight through. Ba-ba-dee-da-dee-dee, ba-ba-dee-ba-dee-dee, ba-ba-dee-ba-dee-dee, da-ba-da-ba-dee-dee, because it builds a sense of logic. If you mess with the sequence, then it doesn't always hold together. Let's back it up a little bit, try and catch some of that. Right here? Wait, where are we? We're way up here. Woo! He's so ahead of it. Mm-hmm. Look at that B sitting on top of that B flat chord. You know, that doesn't necessarily belong there, but he knows that if he plays B flat here, it's not that interesting because B flat belongs in this E flat chord. B flat is the fifth of this chord. And so because it's redundant, it sounds a lot hipper to play the B over here, even though it's a wrong note, right? Or flat nine. It's the wrong notes, even though it's, you know, it's a more dissonant note. He's able to get away with that because he knows if he plays B flat here, it blows out this chord. You don't get the resolution on the E flat because you already played it. That's a kind of hard thing to figure out instinctively is sometimes chords, if they have a redundant note, you have to decide when to play it, right? Because if you're going to a tonic chord like this big E flat chord, if you play that chord, that note too early, it just takes the energy out of your solo. Let's back it up a little bit. Right, and look at this little substitution here. This G doesn't belong necessarily in the B7. At this point in history, it becomes more and more common because he's creating history right here. You know, like before Coleman Hawkins, people were not going to play a G over a B7. And he said, there's more stuff in these chords, folks, than the bottom. Like, look at the top. What if this is B7 altered? You know, what if it has more dissonance than you thought? Potentially, you know, he, again, all this isn't just sort of some magical improvisation. He's researched this. Like when I listen to solo, I can tell this isn't his first time soloing on this, and he's not just giving it a try. It's not this idea of improvisation that is like he just fell out of the sky from some inspiration. He's practiced this really well, and he's still improvising with the material. So he's built up a library of, he's built up a library of practicing through this song to the point that he found out that there was more stuff he could do, these more substitutions and like pushing the chords to go, or pushing against the chords, in a deeper way that most people hadn't thought of because maybe they hadn't practiced the song that long where they realized there's other stuff available to you. Like the general rule with modern chord substitutions is if you play it, if the chord is usually D minor and I want to play A flat minor over it, I can do that. As long as I play A flat minor really simply, right? If I try to substitute C sharp over G, I can do that as long as I don't try and change the chord. I just play C sharp over the G chord. You can do that. So it's a game of logic, and like you can build chords by half steps or whole steps or force. Those are the ones I would encourage you to check out trying. Just put on a drone of like, you know, something like an A minor is a nice one to start with. I did this with Rich Perry, great saxophone player in the Village Vanguard Orchestra. He taught me this. And he's like, I put on like the simplest tune I can, and then I just start playing two fives over it, any two fives, and try and two five sequences, like any combination of a 2-5 progression over that chord, and find stuff that I like, because you can make them work as long as you're sort of disciplined in the definition of that chord. You don't try and play too much, right? So when we talked about the modern stuff, I said that he's playing the upper parts of the chords and the more advanced material, but if you're substituting, you have to play something very functional and very simple if you're already outside of the rules. I hope that makes sense. And you guys are free to contact me and I'll be glad to answer any questions. If you ever want to get a hold of me, you can find me on my website, petecarney.net. I'm glad to help out. It says, like, I love talking about jazz, and I hope that helps you guys practicing some of the harder stuff in jazz, our chord substitutions, advanced stuff that's worth spending some time on, because it gives you a lot of other stuff in your playing than just playing the basic chords. So thanks again for having me. And if you got any questions, don't be afraid to reach out.
Thank you, Dr. Carney. And this is advanced stuff, but I want to encourage, even if it's a young player listening, you know, it's not an overnight process, but if you do exactly what Dr. Carney said, just take your time, you know, look at the transcriptions, you know, take a measure or two and really dissect it. You can go a long, long way. Would you agree,
Dr. Carney? Oh, absolutely. Like, it's not a, you know, sometimes you got to dig into a really small, like a two measures and just say, man, I got to work on this, because it's, if it bothers you, you should check it out. Like, what is he doing here? You know, like, what did Coleman Hawkins do on that bar? You know, if you'll learn a lot more the more you focus on small learning material than trying to, you know, be good overnight, you know, or like trying to stretch out and just, you can't just improvise to be a good improviser. You know, it's, I think you have to do the research. You have to steal from people and see what they're doing. That's what makes you a good player. It's the research. The improv part is the fun part. Just like we talked about, you wouldn't go play a football game and just, you can't just go play football all the time. You have to do warm-up drills and all that. But that it's the same with us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we want to thank you for this awesome session today, Dr. Carney. And we want to thank everyone for tuning in, whether you're watching this live or you're going in the archive and rewinding and practicing and taking notes. But we also want you to go out and share the great things you're hearing here at the Young Lions Jazz Master Virtual Sessions. Keep in mind, all these sessions are free. We have them archived on our website. You can go there, www.clearwaterjazz.com/education. And we're always open to suggestions for future topics, or, you know, if you really like what's happening, we would love to hear from you. So until next time, I'm your guest host, Michael Kernodle, and we're happy to have you here. And we're going to see you next time. Thank you, Dr. Carney.
Well, thank you, Mike.
Everyone, keep swinging. Let's go. See you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Clearwater Jazz Holidays Young Lions Jazz Master Virtual Sessions. Thank you to our friends at Marine Max Clearwater for helping to present this podcast series. To learn more about the Clearwater Jazz Holiday Annual Festival tradition, other special events throughout the year, and our year-round education and outreach, please visit clearwaterjazz.com.